Hello, and welcome to Openly Gamer Theater's production of The Stygian Fragment, a Call of Cthulhu roleplay drama.
This is Mike, and I'm playing Father Evan Daniel Leary.
Hello, this is Dan, and I am playing Phineas Lockwood.
This is Brandon. I'll be playing Clarence Rouse.
This is Shannon. I'm playing Julia Margaret Barnes.
This is Jason. I'm playing Jack Houston Smith.
And I'm Sean. I'm playing Robert Lewis Covington.
Be warned, the following content may not be suitable for all audiences.
A message waited for Rouse and I when we reached the Plaza Hotel. It was from Betty. Smith and Leary were wrapping up their research at the St. Louis University Library and would take a taxi to meet us at the Falstaff Mansion for dinner. We decided to wait out front with Lockwood and Covington for the car that Falstaff promised, which arrived promptly at 7 p.m. 30 minutes later, we arrived at the Falstaff Mansion, a huge white house in the Benton Park area of the city. The driver pulled up to the front of the house where tuxedoed servants awaited us at the curb with large umbrellas open and ready to hurry us up the steep front steps and inside. We were then escorted to a large atrium where Charles Falstaff stood at the head of an immense dining table. He smiled at us and motioned for us to enter and take seats near him. I sat closest to Falstaff, not wanting to miss any detail of the dinner conversation. Unfortunately, as is common among those of society, small talk dominated the first course. Though it was the absolute best caviar I have had, I was keen on getting down to business. It was shortly after the hors d'oeuvres were taken away that Jack and Father Leary arrived. Throughout dinner, either Clarence or myself would try to steer the conversation toward the reason we were there, but Falstaff would have none of it. It was actually impressive. Charles Falstaff was a master of conversation and decorum. It seemed as if he was intentionally dodging us in an effort to draw out the night. At one point, as we grew more impatient, he held out a hand to silence us, pointed to his ear while he nodded toward the servant door. We understood instantly. Someone was listening. Undoubtedly, we would have to retire to a more secluded area before we could talk candidly, which occurred shortly after dinner, when we adjourned to a sitting room just off the atrium for cigars. Charles followed us in the large room, closing the door behind him. He looked at each of us in turn and smiled.
This room is a bit more secure, so I'm not too concerned with being overheard. As I informed Mr. Rouse and Miss Barnes earlier today, it is my belief that the men that you have seen doing the work on my home may be involved in illegal activity, and I'm hoping that you will be able to discern if my suspicion has merit.
Well, what sort of illegal things do you mean?
Well, Mr. Smith, my initial assumption is that they are using my home to bootleg alcohol.
Seems reasonable.
The theft of my property by a man under their employ also concerns me. I'm sure Mr. Rouse has already told you of my thoughts in this matter, but frankly, I cannot see a connection. If they are using my home for alcohol production or storage, then why cover up the truth of the theft? It is all very strange. My hope is that you will uncover some detail that I have not.
We sat in silence listening to the thunder rolling outside while the men smoked their cigars. Falstaff eyed me a few times, knowing that I understood how outside the norm it was for a group of men to share after-dinner cigars with a woman in the room. He never gave me the impression that he disapproved of my presence, merely enjoyed the oddity. It hardly made me a suffragist, but I wasn't about to wait by myself elsewhere in that spooky house. Smith cleared his throat, drawing Falstaff's attention.
Mr. Falstaff, how do you get to the basement of your mansion?
The basement? Oh, well, the best way to get there is the back steps.
And the cabins underneath St. Louis, I've read before that the Falstaff Brewing Company used to use the cabins to keep their beer cool.
Yes. My grandfather built the brewery directly above the cave for precisely that purpose.
You have access to those caves?
I do. This house resides over a large portion of the cavern system. It allowed my family access to the brewery without ever having to venture outside. My father was quite fond of using it in the wintertime.
And where's the brewery at from here?
Charles casually indicated south with an open palm.
So it's possible that these people could be stealing from your house and going through the caves.
It is possible, but unlikely. I keep the door to those stairs locked at all times. I have the only key.
There's only one key.
Yes, Mr. Smith. I possess the only one. As I stated to Mr. Rouse earlier, though, you are welcome to any area of my home to carry out your investigation, including that stairwell, should you need.
Where we're at now, do I see anything in the house that piques my interest in terms of artifacts?
There's a rather large library.
I think we may need to spend a few minutes on the surface, but if you want to split up, that's certainly your prerogative, Mr. Rouse.
There was a book here that Julia wanted to look at, or am I totally off base there?
Ah, yes, my brother's book. I took the liberty of setting it out for you after our last conversation. The rest of you are more than welcome to accompany us, if you like. The library is one of the more comfortable rooms in my house. It is where I spend most of my evenings.
Mr. Rouse, this might be worth your while.
All right, I'll come with you.
We followed Charles to the library, a room slightly smaller than the sitting room, but far cozier. Fully stocked bookshelves lined three of the walls, with the fourth dominated by a large fireplace. Falstaff flipped a switch, causing the chandelier above us to blink with electric light, and then closed the door. We got settled in the many stuffed armchairs arrayed around the room. Smith and Leary marveled at some of the works on the shelves. Rouse, the only one of us who remained standing, nodded to Charles and frowned.
There's no alcohol in here at all?
I can arrange to have some brought to you, Mr. Rouse.
I would very much appreciate it.
Very well. Please, make yourselves at home, and I will return momentarily.
See, while he goes out and arranges some alcohol, maybe we should catch up on what we've done today.
That's a good idea.
How does this house make me feel? Like, what's the setup of this place?
It gives you the creeps. It's way too big and way too empty. It's like this dude and his servants, and there's nobody else.
And it's all echoes.
Yeah,
and
very much a creeps. Lot of echoes. The library is stocked. The sitting room was stocked, but there's a lot of stuff like covered with sheets.
Kind of like Wayne Manor.
Yes.
Let's, Mr. Smith, Father, what'd you guys find out today at the library?
Well, we did find a copy of the Black Book.
Interesting.
Is it with you?
No, we were not allowed to take it out of the library. Well, we didn't even really try. But I did make copious notes and sketches from the book as what I thought were appropriate and necessary.
What did you deem appropriate and necessary?
Well, in Chapter 11, for example, they talk about an ancient tribe in what is now Hungary. And there was a city there called Zusthal.
Does that name ring a bell?
It's mentioned in the poem.
It's mentioned in the poem.
I think what my associate here is trying to say is that they worship a toad-like idol.
I was getting to that.
That was similar to one worshipped in a lost city.
That is correct. And we were also able to find that in many fringe archaeological circles, there is a belief that the mound city across the river here in Cahokia,
yes,
was built on top of another city, an ancient city. And if this, of course, is unfounded, there's really no concrete evidence to suggest that this is true. But nevertheless, and I've also put in inquiries to the man who wrote the poems to my university at Miskatonic.
Justin Jeffrey.
That's correct. And matter of fact, my contact at Miskatonic, a close associate of mine, is related to Mr. William Webb, who was known to have been in St. Louis around the turn of the century and was here for...
Yeah, you mentioned the disturbance at the convention.
This is correct.
Was there anything else that you could find out about the disturbance?
Just that he was vindicated later. It turned out that he was the information that he had claimed at that time was true.
The more he talks, mm-hmm. the more he brings all this stuff up. I start chain smoking. And
when he pulls one out, I light it up.
I've already said I've been smoking this entire time.
So the room's starting to get rather hazy.
Well, the information that he had provided at that time was that the Eskimos were this degenerate tribe of Eskimos, were involved in dark arts and ritual sacrifice. And
it's called supper.
Supper, right? I don't think it involved seals. I think it may have involved human sacrifice.
Of young children.
I suppose it's possible.
I'm sorry,
but
to interrupt, go ahead.
At any rate, a detective in New Orleans, was able to find another idol that lent credence to what Professor Webb had claimed that the Eskimos were doing.
Dr. Cummington, what did you find out about the...
This girl was abused before she was killed in this car accident.
What do you mean, abused?
She had bruisings around her neck, around her wrists. She had two fingers missing on her left hand. She also had that circular burn on her back. None of this was in the report.
Could you show me what the mark looked like on her back?
Here, give me this.
Covington reached for a pin from the corner writing desk he sat at and sketched a swirled symbol. The same we found all over the wall of Dorian Daly's apartment, as well as in the invitation to the black-veiled prophet ball.
So she had that, was it cut into her, burned into her?
Burned into her back.
Could you tell that?
And all this was done before she was killed. And then her last dying words was, find the boy and the baby.
Oh, do you think that could be the candy company baby and the
Heiberg
baby and the candy company
and the
boy?
Boy.
It could be.
It's got to be.
We think it may be associated with the Black Veil Prophet.
She was in an argument that evening before she died with her boyfriend.
I turned my full attention to the book Charles had laid out for me. Before that, I was just idly flipping through it. Remnants of Lost Empires by Otto Dostman. To me, it's pretty dry stuff. I showed it to Smith, who got really excited. He looked over my shoulder as I read, which annoyed me greatly. To the point that I told him to go on and screw. Jack walked over to where the Dostman work was previously shelved and let out a rather effeminate squeak. I scowled at him, calling him Ethel, and he smiled, laying the book he had found gently on the end table beside me and took a seat in the chair on the other side. His eyes sparkled with delight as he nodded toward his find, took it up, and began flipping through the pages.
This is a copy of Herbert Whitman's Origin of the Mississippi, and this is a very rare tome. This is it was a very limited run of these. This is a valuable book. This is fascinating. The author, Herbert Whitman, he discredits another archaeologist, a contemporary of his named Reginald Jacobs, who was a proponent of the Zuxor theory. He claimed to have found an idol before an archway. Whitman says it was a hoax. They've never been able to find the archway or the idol.
Where does it claim it was found?
In the lowest chamber in Monk's Mound.
Where is that?
It's across the river. As I mentioned it yesterday, it's a very large earthen structure, the base of which is bigger than the largest pyramid in Egypt.
I've been there as well, and there are no archways.
Yeah, certainly not on the surface. I'm assuming the archway he speaks of was excavated, that it was underground. Mm-hmm. And it's those mounds are filled with bodies and graves. Many of them are just nothing but graves. It's almost filled entirely with bodies, some of which people were buried alive, a human sacrifice.
Suddenly, the door opened and Charles walked back in with a crystal decanter of amber liquid atop a silver serving platter.
My apologies, Professor. Please, do not let me interrupt you.
Oh, no, not at all. I was fascinated by your copy of Herbert Whitman's Origin of the Mississippi, and this is a rare tome.
Oh, Billy collected all sorts of rare books. Many of them are beyond my interest, but they remind me of him.
Billy?
My brother, William Jr.
I would suggest, Mr. Falstaff, that a tome such as this rightfully belongs in a collection more suited to academics, perhaps St. Louis University.
You may be right. I will make arrangements to have it donated.
Your brother, he shot himself, is that correct?
He did. It was reported to the press that it was an accident, but the truth is that Billy killed himself. He took the closing of the brewery very hard, though he never showed it. It is my guess that he felt that he disappointed the family. A shame that destroyed him.
In the chest?
Yes, in the chest.
Isn't an unusual way to take your one's life?
I suppose so, unless you know that my father and sister committed suicide in the very same fashion.
Sorry to hear that.
Seems like you have a long line of...
Curse, Miss Barnes. It is a curse that haunts my family.
A curse? What curse?
My family enjoyed privilege and power for many years, becoming one of the most prominent families. But we are by no means the most influential in the city's history. Let's just say that bargains were struck to ensure that my family's fortune and prestige remain strong. Bargains that have taken their toll.
Mr. Falstaff, let's get down to brass tacks here. What can you tell me about the Black-Veiled Prophet?
Charles slowly blinked, and when he focused on Rouse again, his entire demeanor had changed. As if the aloof, eloquent man who had been standing there a moment before had been instantly replaced. His eyes burned with an intense clarity, which was not mirrored in his voice as he spoke.
The Black-Veiled Prophet Society is a charitable organization involving city leaders, eminent families...
I'm not looking for the company line here. I want to know more about it.
Very well, Mr. Rouse. Let us drop all pretense, then. My father was a founding member of the Black-Veiled Prophet Society. Before the turn of the century, like-minded businessmen decided that the growing movement of worker parties, socialists, and the like posed a threat to their livelihoods, their values. In an effort to minimize the influence of these various factions, the society consolidated power, taking full control of St. Louis.
Are you still in the Black-Veiled Prophet?
In name only. I refuse to be involved. I disagree with their vision. I swore never to attend any of their black meetings.
Black meetings.
It's not just a figure of speech, Mr. Smith. There is an inner circle among the society. They call themselves the Order of the Stygian Prophet. Billy told me that the man at the head, this Stygian Prophet, his identity is the closest kept secret in the organization. They hold what they call black meetings. It is where they dictate everything that happens, civic or otherwise, within this city.
So this isn't just a fraternal organization.
The public face is very much like most fraternal organizations, Mr. Smith.
This is more of a cult, isn't it, Mr. Falstaff?
One that has had influence on my family for far too long.
Sounds detestable to me.
It is, Father Leary. It is.
I absolutely agree, Father.
I cross myself. Half a mind to go back to the university, perhaps even the county. Law enforcement to look into this group.
Yeah, Father, I would caution you. I'm sure that an organization as such as Mr. Falstaff describes probably has far-reaching tentacles even into the St. Louis County Police.
Charles pulled a Golden Hope chest from his inner pocket and pulled a fag. Smith hastily stepped in and lit it. After Falstaff took a deep dragon exhale, he casually motioned with the hand holding the cigarette, causing a ring of smoke to slowly drift upward from his fingers.
I assume that you have heard the name... Oliver Laclede?
I have heard of Oliver Laclede.
Oliver Laclede's a very well-known individual in society.
Oliver is the president of the Laclede Bank, making him the richest man in St. Louis. He controls all commerce in the city, but his true power lies in his influence over the other major families, controlling how they intermarry, dictating who breeds with whom.
That's interesting.
It is done in an effort to solidify and maintain control.
Mr. Falstaff, what can you tell me about the Cherokee Club incident that happened 7 years ago?
Charles took another long drag off his pill. A ripple of shame crossed his face.
I am profoundly sorry for the pain I have caused you.
Excuse me?
Many innocents perished that night, and their deaths haunt my soul.
You were involved in my uncle's death?
Yes, Dr. Covington. Unfortunately, I am to blame for your loss. All of your losses.
In what capacity?
Everyone who received an invitation to the ball was actively recruited by the society.
That's a bombshell.
You see, what Thomas and I did, well, our intent, was to rid this city of a vile evil rotting it from within. At that time, we felt that a few innocent lives lost paled in comparison to the thousands that would be saved. I was a fool.
You were trying to rid the city of the Black Veil Prophet?
Yes, Mr. Smith, we were.
But you didn't succeed.
Thomas Rice?
Yes, Miss Barnes, Thomas Rice. I know that my soul will burn for my sin. I know this. I just could not think of another way.
What is it that you exactly did?
It was arranged so that no one inside that cave would survive.
And you set it on fire?
Yes.
He's leaving out something very important, though, aren't you?
What's he leaving out?
Yeah, I wasn't there. I don't know what you're talking about.
Why did everybody go crazy? I saw a guy trample his own date trying to get out. I saw people beating each other up. I saw people eating the faces off of other people. And I start, like, shaking my gun at him. Shit.
Whoa.
Damn. Put that thing away, hey, Lockwood.
Lockwood, hey, whoa.
You don't know. You weren't there. Father, you saw it.
Shaking my head and kind of backing away a little myself from our host.
I don't think you took into account that people might be able to escape. You've got two survivors right here.
And wasn't your sister-in-law at the party? She survived.
You are correct, Miss Barnes. Vivian survived as well.
As well as your brother and...
You.
Oliver LeClean. I start listing the names that we've heard.
I do not know how anyone got out. Perhaps the bolt on the door was faulty, or there were other exits that I wasn't aware of. I just don't know. What I do know is this. Because members of the Inner Circle survived, the curse lives on. Every day that it is allowed to fester, the threat to this city grows stronger.
I think this confession is over. We will deal with Mr. Falstaff another time, but right now we have to perhaps finish what he started.
You mean you want to sacrifice more people to end a curse? I'm confused. You want to
become vigilantes and kill all these people?
Bring
you want to murder?
To a cult.
I am truly glad you feel that way, Father. Allow me to show you something. Billy was obsessed with the curse upon my family, with learning the origin of the society and the dark cult behind it. He was close. They ruined him, broke him. He hid all his findings in the cave below, in a secret sanctuary. It is where he stored his most valuable treasures, gathered knowledge. Among them may be the means to stop the society and the darkness that blights this city.
We all stood there, staring at Falstaff, almost as if we couldn't believe the awful truth we just learned. I looked at Clarence. I could see it in his eyes. Was this on the level? Did Charles Falstaff bring us here to confess? Or had he orchestrated all of this to get us to complete what he failed to do 7 years ago? We decided to follow him to the rear of the house, to the locked door.
I swore I would never go back down there. Yet there we were, following Charles through that locked door, and down the spiral staircase to the caves below the Falstaff Mansion, where it all began. I honestly don't know why I continued on. Maybe something inside me needed to see it to the end. I just don't know. Anyway, Rouse lit a flashlight when we reached the bottom of the steps and shined it in Falstaff's face when he turned to ensure that we were still all there.
Punch him right in the face.
I think maybe we should wait and see what he's gonna show us. Oh, not like knock him out, punch him. Just
punch him and let him know. That's for killing my brother.
As Charles picked himself up off the ground, Rouse turned his light to me. He leaned in close, looking into my eyes.
How you doing, Lockwood?
I don't like this. I don't want to be here anymore.
Is this where it happened, Mr. Falstaff?
Falstaff gingerly touched the side of his mouth, gauging the damage. His eyes bore into Clarence, then softened as he turned to Jack. He looked about at the surrounding cave and silently nodded, motioning for us to follow. As we trailed him, I hesitantly looked around. Even then, after 7 years, there were still things there to remind me of that night. Charles led us to one of the many shadowy nooks, one that had been used back then to display one of the glass encased works of art. I forget which one. When Rouse's light sliced through the gloom, I spotted a glint of metal. The metal that briefly reflected the light of the flashlight turned out to be a keyhole. From around his neck, Falstaff pulled a golden chain with a square-headed key at its end. Julia perked up and moved in, inspecting the item in Charles' hand, then looked up at me. I could see it in her eyes. It was the original key that Doran Daly had copied. The door unlocked and slid open without a sound. Falstaff motioned for us to follow him inside as he lit an oil lamp on the table beside the raised platform, like a lectern dominating the center of the cramped room. I looked around. The walls were decorated with all manners of foul items. Medallions, suspended from black metal chains with disturbing symbols on them, hung from metal pegs driven into the cave wall. Grotesque painted masks depicted all sorts of maddening, inhuman faces. Open scrolls stretched out in glass display cases. The writing on them was nothing I could read. I shuddered to think what those things were made of. Some kind of supple leather. The centerpiece was a huge stone disc, bracketed to the cave wall with thick metal clamps. It was carved with all sorts of weird symbols. The design was nauseating to look at. A kind of spiral, but separated by spokes. Jack pointed at it in fascination, saying it was an ancient calendar of some sort.
I discovered this room years after Billy's death. I found this key, along with a letter he had written the day before he died. He left it where he knew I would find it someday. The letter directed me here and gave instructions on how to find and unlock his journal.
Charles moved toward the platform at the center of the room. That's when I noticed the large black book resting atop it. Rouse noticed it as well.
Okay. Is it safe to assume that black book is his journal?
That, Mr. Rouse, is Billy's most revered, most secret of his treasures. A translation of an ancient manuscript. Some believe that the original volume that this was translated from was used by the mad Arab Abdul Alhazred to craft his fabled Necronomicon. According to Billy, it holds terrible secrets. Unfortunately, it is in French, a language I neither speak nor read. This very book was owned by August Shoto, one of the founders of this city.
Falstaff pulled a leather-bound book from a gold-lined coffer resting next to the base of the lectern-like platform. He held it up, showing it to all of us.
In this, my brother's journal, are the secrets of my family's curse and the foul truth behind the black-veiled prophet.
As we stood there, Falstaff cleared his throat and looked at each of us as he spoke.
Billy was not, in fact, the firstborn son of William Sr., my father. My oldest brother's name is Frederick. This was revealed to Billy by my mother on her deathbed. Frederick was taken from her just after his birth. My father gave him to the society.
And what did they do with him?
According to Billy, Frederick wasn't the only instance of this. Every founding family has given away their firstborn child.
And these families gave these children willingly?
It is part of their dark covenant. The bargain they made with eternal powers.
And it's all happening again, isn't it?
Yeah.
Children are being taken now, again?
In a way, yes, Mr. Lockwood, they are.
It's starting to make sense now from that lady's last words.
That black ribbon marks the section that my brother's journal claimed tells the origin of the cult behind the society. I dared not let anyone read it before now. Frankly, because I couldn't trust anyone I know. Only those who have lost so much to the society. I can only trust you.
I stepped up beside Charles and looked at the black book on the display. When I reached out to touch it, I hesitated, pausing to look up at Falstaff. May I? He nodded, and I took up the heavy volume, holding it in one hand while casually flipping the thick, yellowed old pages, stopping periodically to scan pages marked with different colored ribbons. My French was good enough. I made out the gist of most of it. It detailed a cult and some sort of ritual.
So I'll keep it to myself at first, but then I'll read it out loud, like when it gets really good.
Make a sanity check.
Yep, here we go. No.
One.
50.
Lost one sanity.
There were two main areas marked. Marked in red was some sort of ritual, along with an intricate diagram of symbols that meant nothing to me at the time. The largest section, marked with a black ribbon, told of the city-state of Zuxal, a frontier outpost of some ancient people long dead.
I can't remember all of it, and frankly, I'm glad. All I can remember is that these people were real degenerates, wicked and barbaric. They worshipped a dark god named Zaster or Haster. They offered living sacrifices to him. Slaves, men, women, and children were all butchered by the thousands in his name. Haster, Zaster. Zuxal's reign was long, but like most, they fell to a slave revolt, no less. According to the book, the revolt was led by a man from the sky. I'm not sure what that means, but whoever he was, the slaves claimed he descended from the heavens and struck down the accursed witch people of Zuxal. When I relayed all of this to my companions, Jack stared at me dumbfounded. He quickly joined me at the pedestal. As I read the rest, Jack whistled and laughed. He was very excited, stating that if authenticated, this book could set modern anthropology and archaeology on its ear, whatever that meant. I could care less that the ancient Mississippians were derived from some slave race. What I did care about was what I found at the end of the section, where it talked about the guardian idol. I found a likeness of the statue that Daly gave to Rouse, only as if it had been undamaged and new, before it was eroded into its current state. The blob-like creature perched atop the pillar wasn't a toad at all, but some demonic ape-looking thing.
Speaking of which, where is the idol?
I would have not brought stolen property that I didn't tell him I had back to his house.
The page showed another detail, not of the idol, which actually wasn't the subject of the drawing at all, but of a gigantic round stone door, and it was labeled the Door of Zah. It seemed to me that the picture was showing that the idol was guarding the door. Mind you, my French was shaky at the time. According to the passage just after the drawing, just beyond the Door of Zah was this sleeping Zastur. I turned to see Jack closely inspecting the calendar behind me, muttering something about Mayan, Aztec design, blah, blah, Mississippian markings, blah, blah. He noticed me looking at him, and he pointed out two symbols. One for return, and the other was for darkness. I pieced it together pretty quickly. The return of the dark god, Zastur. Jack's eyes widened as he deciphered more. He pointed to the center of the symbol that was repeated throughout the piece. The professor said that, literally translated, it was the longest day, what you would call the summer solstice. His trap opened, but nothing came out but a slight squeak. His eyes looked at me, and his silent lips mouthed one word, tomorrow.
Is that symbol on this calendar? This little scroll, little circle?
The circle, yeah. Yes. That is the symbol for the darkness.
Oh, great.
I definitely believe that we're probably wasting valuable time looking over these artifacts now.
So what do you suggest, Father?
Well, aren't we looking for some... The doctor mentioned something about missing children.
Correct.
I think that's a pretty pressing matter.
I agree, Father. The question is, where do we go from here?
Well, this girl that was hit and died was onto something. I think they killed her.
And she mentioned a baby and a...
And a boy. I assume some boy missing or a baby missing.
The Price boy and the Heiberg baby.
I don't think she was onto anything. I think she was sacrifice. We spoke to Leonard Price Sr. He had declined to join the society. We believe that his son's kidnapping was 2 years in the making.
Price.
It's very probable that Lacleed was dating Millen for similar reasons.
What about that, Falstaff? Would it be within this society's realm to enact revenge on someone who turned them down by kidnapping a son?
That is something that they would do, and I believe have done.
It doesn't sound as if that's a requirement. They've sacrificed children for
years.
Well,
I understand that, but family, he specifically told them no,
Mr. Falstaff, do you have any inclination at all as to where they might be keeping these children?
I do not know exactly where they are, no.
No, you couldn't even venture to guess where a possibility might be.
Unless they know where the gate is.
The location of the Door of Zah is the key. It is where they will enact their foul rite.
The gate is located in Monk's Mound. That's all the information that we found, it would seem to indicate to me that it's located in Monk's Mound. Surely they know its location. They've been able to dig to it, and they might be digging right now as we speak. I think we should make haste to across the river to Illinois and go to Monk's Mound. I think it's a shot in the dark, but it's certainly worth the trip. It's not that far. I think it's a safe bet that the Cahokia Mound is clearly involved. It's right at the center of this. It's mentioned so many times, and there's so many artifacts and this wall calendar here. This is early Mississippi, and this was dug up in a mound. This was recovered from a mound.
As groups of this size are wont to do, we continue to argue over our next move. The doc wanting to continue investigating the dead girl by going to the house of the Archibald Cleed, Father Leary wanting to go searching nearby for missing children, but in the end, Jack's idea seemed to be the most sound. We stood there in silence for a moment until Charles sniffed loudly, then composed himself.
It pains me to ask that you undertake this. It is very dangerous, and I am afraid that I will not be able to assist directly. I fear that the society has too much influence over me. It is why my previous attempt to stop them failed. I can be of some help, though. I have read Billy's journal many times. I know the sections of the manuscript you need, though I cannot read the words. I have placed markers near the passages you need.
Falstaff stood there, placing his hand on the book I held, tears in his eyes.
Stop this. At all costs. Take the book with you. Use the incantations within to seal the gate. And then, destroy it.
Thank you for listening. We hope that you have enjoyed this episode of the Stygian Fragment. Please check for further episodes posted on our website, gamerstable.com. Theme music by Thomas Grillo. Background music by Musica Cthulhiana. Openly Gamer Theater would like to thank H.P. Lovecraft for giving us Cthulhu. Any commercial use of this production is prohibited. Call of Cthulhu role-playing game is property of Chaosium Incorporated. Openly Gamer Theater is trademark property of Side Tangent Productions.